Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
We're going to keep moving on to another guest, and he has been with us many times, is a very familiar to our listeners and our network, the ExitCoachNetwork.com. Larry Bell is an incredibly gifted planner, has talked to us many times. As a matter of fact, Larry's one of our few guests who has his own folder on the audio library at ExitCoachRadio.com because we think his ideas are so forward and unique and so beneficial for business owners out there. So I want to welcome Larry back to the show. Larry, it's a pleasure to have you back on. How are you today?
Bill, thank you for asking. I'm doing great, and I hope your listeners are also.
Well, thank you. I'm sure, we have a beautiful day out here in Southern California. I hope you're having a nice day back there in Maryland.
It's dark, it's rainy, but I'm inside, so I'm comfortable. Thank you.
Okay, well, we can't all have sunshine all the time. But Larry, your ideas have brought a lot of sunshine to a lot of our listeners. And I'm never quite sure exactly what we're going to talk about, but I know today we're talking about year-end planning, maybe in light of the new regulatory environment. Is that what we're looking at today, or where do you want to go with us today?
Absolutely, Bill. While many people are feeling good about what may be happening in the economy, it's still a very fragile time, and business owners, whether they're owners of C-Corps or S-Corps or pass-through entities, are finding it hard to make ends meet and over and above keeping the door open, also starting to set aside some type of benefit program for themselves and some or all of their employees. So today we want to talk about a time-tested approach using group term life insurance, a Section 79 plan, to provide benefits for your employees, but also have a small group of those special employees that you want to handle differently, or just the owner themselves. And we can set this up, and we don't have to fund it. We don't have to determine how much we want to put in until the following October 15th of the year that we're getting the deduction for and that we're funding for the selected employees. That's what we want to do.
Okay, so this is something that has to be set up by end of, say, calendar year, right? End of the calendar year?
If the employer, and this is any employer, S-Corp or C-Corp or pass-through entity, if they have an existing group term coverage for their rank and file, or in their health insurance, if they have an ADD, accidental death and dismemberment, then that existing plan can be amended after year end. So as long as there is an existing ADD or group term life in existence, and most employers do have that, then we can amend the plan down the road and it will relate back.
Larry, what I like about the topics that you talk about are a lot of people think group term life insurance is just a throwaway benefit that you offer for employees. It's just laying around doing nothing. And here you come up and say, wait a second, not so fast. That could be an incredible tax beneficial planning tool if you look at it a different way. And so let's talk about that. Do a lot of companies have these group term life policies for their employees as kind of an add-on benefit? A lot of times, like you said, it comes with the health insurance in some kind of a benefit, and they don't think too much about it, of course, unless somebody dies, because it doesn't provide any lifetime benefits normally for anybody. It's just there if someone passes away, which is important, but doesn't happen a lot out there. So what can they do? I mean, what are the steps, and how would someone know if this might be beneficial to them? What are we looking for?
All good questions. What we're looking for is any type of employer. It can even be a nonprofit organization, and they are looking to provide benefits on a permissibly selective way for particular employees and not all of the employees. So that we then talk to the owners and find out how much, you know, what do the owners want to do? Or they're looking at this as an asset accumulation device, then we would, using actuarial tools, come up with the funding approach to meet the goals of the owners of the company. The IRS has looked at this many, many times and actually issued a technical advice memorandum in the year 2000. It's actually TAM 200002047. And what that said is that when you have an executive carve-out, in other words, you have a permanent policy for the executives and you have group term for everybody else, the taxation to the employee is not the cost of the premium. It is rather the economic benefit, and with a group term life program, that there is no tax on the first $50,000 of death benefit, and then there is the table I cost for amounts greater than $50,000, and it's in five-year bands, so the older somebody is and the larger the amount of the death benefit, then the greater amount of the tax would be generated at the employee level. So it's still pennies on the dollar as opposed to the amount of the premium that is being contributed by the employer. The employer should be able to deduct the amount of the premium based upon actuarial testing that can be provided so that the employer gets a deduction. The employee then is taxed on the table I, and everybody lives happily ever after.
So the employee then owns the cash values in the policy and, of course, has access to the death benefit for their beneficiaries?
The employee has the beneficial interest of the cash value in the policies, and upon the employee no longer being an employee of the employer, either because they terminated and left or because they've retired, then that is not a taxable event. The employee has a low basis in the policy, and if he were to surrender it at that time, then they would be taxed on the difference between the low basis and the cash that they receive from the policy. So that could be a taxable event. However, there is another provision of the law, which Internal Revenue Code, which is Section 72T, which says that the owner of a policy, that employee we talked about, or that owner of the company, can access cash in the policies by way of loans or advances of death benefit, and that is not currently subject to income tax. So looking at that provision, the employer could be making contributions along the way. The employee is going to be taxed on the table I cost. Upon the termination of the funding, that is not a taxable event. If the former employee accesses cash in the policy by way of loans, that is not income to them. And as long as there's sufficient death benefit to repay the carrier, then there would never be a taxable event.
And then at the ultimate death of the employee, that tax-free death benefit cleans up all of the debt and the loans that were borrowed from the policies, presumably on a tax-free basis at that time?
That's exactly correct under Section 101 of the Internal Revenue Code. There's another happy accident in this planning tool, Bill, and that has to do with transfer taxes or gifts, and that it specifically is indicated in the IRS announcement, Revenue Ruling 66110, that the economic benefit in other words, the funding of the policy stops when the policy is no longer being funded by the employer. So that economic benefit, the Table I, which is similar to PS 58 costs or Table 2001, those become very, very expensive, very rich by about the time the employee reaches age 60. So from a planning standpoint, if we had a 50-something owner of the company or executive, we would fund the policy in an accelerated fashion and then stop funding close to age 60 so we have the least amount of tax overall. Also, remembering from a gift tax standpoint, it becomes very attractive because where split dollar arrangements are used many times, and it's a good tool, but the split dollar economic benefit keeps going as long as a loan is outstanding. That is not the case using a gifting or transfer and the funding with the Section 79. Once the employer stops making the premium payment, there is no further reportable income, there is no tax, and to the same extent there would then be little, if any, gift tax, so we have a economically efficient way to move business interests over a number of years in compliance and paying the least amount of tax.
Now, Larry, it's a great concept. It might be a little much for our listeners to track because we talked about a lot of tax codes and a lot of different areas. But the bottom line is what you just said. It's a way to transfer business value on a tax-deductible way to a business owner or a set of key employees in such a way that they won't feel the full brunt of the tax as long as they follow certain rules and guidelines along the way. The way it would blow up is if after the funding is complete and the employee goes and cashes in the policy, they're going to pay tax on – it's all going to come back to roost at that point as far as them paying taxes. But they don't have to do that. They have another way to get access to the funds if they need them through the policy loans and then let the death benefit pay back everything because everybody dies sometime. So it seems like with the right and correct structure, it's tremendously tax efficient. Now, is this something that you say you have to have the group term in place. Is there a ratio of a number of policies that you have to have or number of employees in order to get maximum benefits for the key employees or the owner?
No. However, the greater number of employees, then for discrimination testing, the only hiccup is the face amount of the policy for the highly compensated must be exceeded by the face amount for the rank and file. Remember, we're using a cash value policy for the highly compensated, but we're using a inexpensive, cheap, four-minute term for the rank and file. So the more employees you have, the more diluted the benefit is for the rank and file, so the cost then would be reduced at the employer level. However, this can be done with under 10 employees, and it still would not be deemed a discriminatory plan. So everything that we've talked about would be still in keeping. Because we have talked about a lot of specifics, I have taken the time and written articles and have had interviews, some of which you already have posted. And then also, if your plan participants want to reach out to me on LinkedIn. If they connect through LinkedIn, there's actually copies of all of the articles for all of the different tools that we have talked in the past. So that way we can work with the client together with the client's attorneys and accountants so that the client can get the maximum benefit in their overall income tax and estate tax planning.
Yeah, and it goes without saying that any kind of a concept like this should be obviously looked at by your team, your tax and legal advisors and people that know what they're doing, so they can review it, make sure not only that it makes sense, but that it makes sense for you and your situation. So, Larry, let's give an example. If a person, a business owner out there, has, say, 10 employees on a group term that's $50,000, so they cap it out where the table I works best for them. So they have $500,000 of total death benefit, and then they may be able to have a $450,000 policy on themselves that they fund as heavily as they can for a period of time. Is that kind of how the math works?
Yes, that's all of those statements are in line. And another thing to remember, because if you wanted to put more money away, you would say, well, you got to provide more death benefit for your rank and file. The law doesn't say that it has to be provided as much as it says it has to be available. Many times we find, if we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of death benefit for a 20-something or a 30-something, they really don't care about that. So that we, and also remember, if they're receiving the benefit of $200,000 or $300,000 of death benefit, that will be a taxable event at the table I level to them, so that the employer could say, I'll provide $50,000, which has no income tax consequences, to you, and I'll make that payment. But then if you want the greater amount, you're going to have to pay tax on that table I cost. Many times the 20, 30-something step back and said, I don't want any more taxable income, but that person still gets to be counted for that greater face amount of the $200,000 or $300,000. So it's all fair, and it allows many times the employer and the owners to be able to put away even more money than what they otherwise would have had available to them.
Now, wait, did you just say if they're offered more but they opt out of it, it still counts?
Yes, that's exactly what I tried to say, and thank you for saying it.
No, that's I didn't realize that. So they don't actually, because I thought, you know, what you're going to say is the employer can bonus or double bonus the amount of the table I tax for the amount over $50,000, just to, because the benefit they'll get from it by having a bigger policy that allows bigger funding for themselves would be so great.
Actually, Bill, many times, because employers realize, the owners of companies realize that their staff, their employees are assets to the company, so that they will do a double bonus, if you will, and pay the tax on the table I. I'm not suggesting that you want to do this necessarily instead of a 401k. However, it works out real nicely where you have a 401k and then you wish to provide additional benefits in a tax-deductible way. Mm-hmm. This way, the owners of the company can provide for those more valued employees additional benefits without violating the discrimination test and without having to play catch-up and putting more money in a 401k because your management or middle management wanted to put more money away on their own.
So it's great. I love the strategy. How does one get started on kind of an analysis or evaluation as to whether they should do something? You know, maybe they should be looking at their benefits now, right, before we get to the end of the year, because they may want to retrofit their group term benefits so that it's in line with the availability of greater funding, even if they don't pull the trigger on it. So what are the first steps?
The first step is going to be to give me a call or send me an email so that we can then have a conversation. This conversation is not generating any form of fee. It's a continuing educational device, and then we'll go through designs. We'll look to what the clients believe they want to have done. We'll perhaps make some additional suggestions to them to refine it, because we've done this over 100 times, and every case is different, but there's a lot of similarities. And then when we go through the process, we would also work in a multidisciplinary type approach, reaching out to the client's attorneys and or accountants to make sure that everybody was on board, so that then we could get the funding in place. And the other reason why, while you could still do it as late as 10 and a half months after year end, the sooner you make the contribution, the sooner that money starts to build up income tax free or income tax deferred, so there's more money on the backside.
Okay, so if someone, if an employer out there does not currently offer group term insurance, here it is in October of 2014, and they say, but I sure want to set this up so I can do some funding on this next year, is there some kind of a time limit? Do they have to have a group term policy set up and in place by 12/31 of this year, or is it too late for this year?
No, it's not too late for this year. The test is on the last day of the calendar year, if the employer is a calendar year entity, in other words, that's where their year ends, then by that day they have to have signed the paperwork to have a group term plan in effect. It doesn't have to be funded for another 3.5 months after that.
Wow, that's fantastic. Larry, another fantastic idea, and really appreciate you checking in with us often because you bring such great ideas out. So what's the best way for our listeners to start a conversation with you? What phone number do they call you at?
Easiest to reach me at is 240-604-6945. I'm on the East Coast. Also, my email address is Larry Bell, LarryBell, at theuniquesolution.com, theuniquesolution.com.
And you mentioned to connect with you on LinkedIn. How do you identify yourself on LinkedIn?
Larry Bell, got a Washington, D.C. base, and that'll get me.
Okay. I thought there's got to be more Larry Bells. I know there's a ton of Bill Blacks out there, so I figured there's more than one Larry Bell, but they'll find you if they look for you in the Washington, D.C. area. And again, you're looking for Larry Bell at theuniquesolution.com and with the phone number of 240-604-6945. Hey, listeners, you're looking for tax reduction ideas that benefit you? We got them. Larry Bell brings them to us all the time. And Larry, thanks again for joining us, and we'll look forward to the next time.
Bill, thank you. Enjoyed our conversations. Be well.
All right, you too. Been talking with Larry Bell of The Unique Solution. We're going to be right back and keep this train a-rolling, so stay with us.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing over 250 top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.